Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Commander Clash podcast, where the Commander Clash crew talks all things Commander. And this week, we got a sweet one. We are going to be tier ranking life gain spells in Commander. We always have conversations. How much life gain do you play? Is it worth it? Is it even good at all? And this topic is so important. We even had to bring Richard out of retirement to come and teach us about the power of life gain in Commander. Richard, good to have you back. How's it going?
My favorite topic, life gain. It's great. Unfortunately, you guys have weird opinions on life gain, so we're going to have to dissect that. But life gain is great, guys. Like, imagine if you just had twice the starting life total. Like, look how tanky you are. It's amazing.
I figured if there's someone that actually plays Fruition, that has to be the person you get on the podcast to talk about life gain, because you know they must really know their stuff if they know what Fruition is. So anyway, we got a different crew this week. We got Richard here. Both Tomer and Phil are traveling this week. So we also have Morgan filling in. How's it going today, Morgan?
It's going good. I'm also a fan of some incidental life gain. I mean, you guys believe in the fog meta. You gain enough life. That's basically a fog. So excited to talk about some of these cards.
That is true. And then, of course, Krim, who I think mostly gains life with cards like Mr. Negative, right? That's kind of more your style of life gain.
Whoa. Don't forget Resolute Archangel, which is also like pretty much Mr. Negative. And on top of that, I am now a life gain expert just because of Hope.
Yeah,
that is true. That
he's ruined life gain for all of us with his Hope. Yeah.
So anyway, that's the crew. I'm Seth, probably better known as Saffron Olive, by the way. But that's the crew for today, and we're going to tier rank some life gain in just a minute. But before we do, we got a couple of sponsors. Our show today is brought to you by Foil Armor. Do you have problems with your foils curling? Well, Foil Armor is the ultimate solution for flattening your foils. It's a two-way humidity pack that you simply put inside an airtight container with your cards, and Foil Armor will absorb and release moisture, making your cards completely flat. Put it back in your storage box to keep your cards flat forever, and you can head over to foilarmor.com and use the code MTGOldfish to get 15% off. Our show is also brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use their curated service via sending as many cards as you want with a buy list value of $1 or more, and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use their sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results in a fast pin once your order's processed, and you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/MTGOldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And now it's time for the comment of the week. So last week, we talked about the top cards from Spider-Man, but all of our top comments came from one random turn of phrase, courtesy of Phil, who isn't even here to defend himself today. But our top comment comes from @AshRealis9571, says, "Let he who has not beat his own lizard lose the first tail. Ancient proverb." If you don't know what that reference is, go watch last week's podcast. It'll make way more sense. That was still so that good moment. I laughed so
the
hard.
Comments
it was
went,
the hardest I laughed.
Let
in a
Phil
podcast.
Know.
I wasn't even here, and I saw a clip of Seth just hysterically laughing.
Oh, it was
straight
so good.
Minute.
It was really so good.
It's all Seth's so fault good. Too. I held my stature. I held my ground for a second, and then Seth lost.
Grim was
it,
doing
I was like,
good.
Okay, I'm losing. I'm losing the fight.
It reminded me of all the dragon puns from a couple months ago. Yikes.
Tomer's just too pure.
No.
Anyway, thank you. Thank you for sending in your comments. Leave a comment to this episode, and maybe you'll be the comment of the week next time. So anyway, today, we are tier ranking life gain spells, and we're going to do this the way that we normally do, which is we got a huge list of life gain spells, almost 40 spells altogether, which are either cards that we play a lot or cards that are highly ranked on EDH Rec. We put them all in the spreadsheet. We each graded them, and now we're going to kind of hash it out and go over a bunch of them. We can't get through all 40, but we're going to get through a bunch of them today, and here's how the grading system works. So two things to note before we get to the cards. So first, as we gave these cards grade, we were assuming that we were not playing them in a life gain deck. So if you're a dedicated life gain deck, of course, most life gain cards are going to be good. So this is trying to give grades based on how good these life gain cards are in non-life gain decks. Would you play them as incidental life gain in just a normal deck? And as far as the grading system, S is every deck true staples. A is good in a lot of decks. B is good in specific decks. And this, I would say, is where cards that are only good in the life gain archetype type would mostly fall in this. C is not great, but maybe you'd play an A deck. And then D is, I don't play this card, or I think this card is kind of bad. So that's our system. Let's get to the cards, and let's start with a classic. When I think of Life Gain, I think of the Editor Killer. Morgan, I'm sure you have nightmares about this card. I'm talking about Soul Warden and also Soul Attendant. And then the green one is Essence Warden. They're all the same card. They're 1 mana 1/1s that say whenever another creature enters the battlefield, you gain a single life. So these cards, I see them a lot on Commander Clash. I've actually been surprised how often we see people playing them not in Life Gain decks. They're insane in Life Gain, but I think they're also pretty good outside of Life Gain. I think it's an A-tier card, personally. That's where I'd put it. But I'm curious what you guys think. Where are you at with Soul Warden and also the other similar versions of that effect?
I mean, if we're talking about outside a Life Gain deck, I'm very curious of Richard's opinion on him, but I mean, like, for me,
yeah, should we say what our all of our rankings are?
So our rankings, A, and then Richard came in at S. So A's across the board. Richard, those are our initial rankings on this one. Richard, I know you're a believer, right, in playing these in basically any creature deck, right, with a lot of creatures. You just play it because it's going to gain life.
So good thing Morgan is here. So I want you guys to know that I purposely do not play Soul Warden in every deck because of the amount of editing overhead it adds.
I miss you so much. Please come back.
So I only play it like when absolutely necessary. Like, you know, I'm doing something with it, but I would play it all the time, right? You slap this bad boy down on turn one and it's gaining you like 20, 30 life or something before it dies without you having to work for it. Like, you don't have to play tokens. You don't have to play a blink deck. You don't have to do anything. Just people will play creatures and it'll gain life. I would rank the white ones S, the green one somewhere between A and B. So the white one matters a lot more because chances are it's drawing cards on the way down. It's being reanimated by Sun Titan. Like, there's a lot more synergies with that one drop. It can hold equipment, stuff like that, right? That green doesn't have access to. So I think the white ones are a lot better than the green ones. So I would only play the green one when I'm specifically doing something, like I'm a blink deck or I'm going, you know, I'm playing Avenger of Zendikar or something, right? But the white ones, I think, go in every deck. Unless you, A, don't want to keep track of triggers, B, you want to spare your editor, you know, stuff like that, right? So that would be the downside, right? Like, oh, excuse me, gain one life. Oh, I think I forgot a life last turn. What am I at exactly? You know, that's the downside of playing this. But if you don't care about that, I think it's one of the best life gain cards.
Yeah, because it doesn't just check your creatures. It also checks everyone else's creatures. And even if you just have like a mediocre amount of creatures, everyone else is also going to have some number of creatures. It comes down early. It's going to gain you a ton of life. You need a specific reason not to play it, I think. It's best in life gain decks, obviously, as most of these creatures are. But yeah, I mean, when you just play these in most decks that have a decent amount of creatures, I mean, they kind of rule.
No. Because, don't you want synergies? Like, example, I get it in, like, a life gain deck, right? Halea, you know, you draw your card, you know, you have all your Johnny's Pride mates. That's awesome. But I don't see a reason to just play this, because there's better ways to gain life than just one here, one there, one here, one there, right? Like, without any synergies to follow up on it.
I think it's naturally right? synergistic, though, in white decks, though, just because, like, if you think about white decks, you have all this stuff like Welcoming Vampire effects that trigger off, like, low-power creatures entering. You have stuff that tutors up one drops. Like, it is just, like, oddly synergistic to be a one-mana 1/1 in a white deck. It wears equipment, which is a big theme of white. So I think that's where the synergy comes in. So that's kind of how I look at it, that it's, like, kind of like Esper Sentinel in a weird way. It's Esper Sentinel, but rather than drawing you some number of cards, it gains you a bunch of life throughout the game, and it just synergizes with all the stuff most white decks are doing.
Yeah, that aren't life gain decks? I don't know. I mean, okay, if you're right about little critters and, like, you know, the two power or less, like archetype of cards, that you can have better creatures, right, than just some one mana 1/1. That just gains you a life here and there. I don't know.
See what Crim ranks highly, but this thing is like one mana gain 20, one mana gain 30.
It can be. Yes.
The problem is it's slow, right? It takes like a couple turns and everyone sees it coming. But I'm curious what Crim ranks higher than this, because it's probably like one of the most you know, the cards that give you the most amount of life and also most amount of life per mana as well. So it'll be interesting to see what Krim ranks highly, but Krim doesn't seem to like life gain. That's my takeaway from this.
Whoa!
Only life gain decks, right? In a generic deck, you don't like life gain.
There's cards that I think are really good generically. So we'll get to it.
Okay.
Maybe we'll find some as we go along. So I think this one we're gonna leave in the A tier. It was all A's and S's, so I think it's a pretty clear A. Speaking of cards that I kind of view as synergy pieces, but are also life gain effects. Let's move on to another, I guess, kind of group of cards. But really, the OG here is Blood Artist. So Blood Artist is a 2-mana 0/1 that says whenever it or another creature dies, you gain a life and target player loses a life. And there's a bunch of variants on Blood Artist. There's some that hit each opponent. There's some that don't target. There's some that are more mana. But Blood Artist is kind of the one that, the OG of this effect. So as far as Blood Artist grades, where do we start on Blood Artist's effects? I think this is a really hard one to grade just because I think of this as like a combo piece, but it does just incidentally gain life like Soul Warden. On our list, we have 3 B's and then 1 A coming in from Blood Artist. Let's start with the A. Morgan, you're the highest grader on this one. What do you think about Blood Artist in Commander as life gain?
I kind of put the Blood Artist and Friends in the same category as Soul Warden. I would think as far as like maybe gaining life, it's probably not gaining you as much life necessarily. But I think the general philosophy of you could just jam it in a generic deck of the color and it will gain you a decent amount of life. And what's nice about Blood Artist is like, yeah, maybe it's not going to gain you as much life as, say, a Soul Warden or something, but you're also going to be dealing a little bit of damage. So there's a little bit of a trade-off there. You don't slam these in every deck, but you could play them in most black decks and feel okay about them.
What do you think of that argument, Richard, of playing this like a Soul Warden? Is this on the same level where you can just play this in any deck because creatures are going to be dying and you're going to gain life off of it, or not?
The only thing saving it is Aristocrats as an archetype exists, and these are like your payoffs, right? So these are extremely strong. If we removed Aristocrats as an archetype, unplayable trash. I would have put this in here to gain life or to deal damage. It's like so slow, and it's also like threatening, right? It's a combo piece. So like, unlike Soul Warden where you slap it on turn one, it'll just live. Like, no one cares. Like, yeah, you're gaining life. Maybe they're criminally underestimated. You know, no one cares. But Blood Artist, you're like, whoa, right? Like any infinite and we're dead, right? So they start removing it quite quickly, and it doesn't serve its role as like gaining you life, right? Because it either dies immediately or you have to hold it for the combo, in which case it's a combo kill, or you're Aristocrats, right? You can actually gain enough value in the one or two turns it's on the battlefield. So actually in a regular deck, I would never play any of these. And then Blood Artist in specific kind of sucks. Like, Blood Artist is the 60 card format version. You want the ones that hit everyone, right? Like, I think Zulaport Cutthroat. There's others that will hit everyone.
Or Sephiroth.
But they don't gain you more life. They just deal more damage. So
yeah. And I'm with Richard on these ones where, like, I think Blood Artist is very good, but I wouldn't play it outside of like some sort of sacrifice based deck. Soul Warden, I could see just playing like in a creature heavy deck. I wouldn't do that with Blood Artist though, in a black deck though. I really need to have like sack outlets for me to want to have it in my deck. Although if I am doing that, it's one of the best cards in the deck, or whatever versions of it I'm playing are some of the best cards in the deck.
Yeah, I would say that pretty much what Richard has said. I fully agree with that, because I don't play any Blood Artist effect in just a random deck.
So B tier it then, I guess. Leave it even in the B's. All right, let's keep moving on. Let's move to a card that I don't know what to think of this card. I think this is one of the strongest cards that we have on our list today, but I've never conceptualized it as a life gain card. And that card is Akroma's Will. And let me pull up the exact text on this, because there are a lot of words on Akroma's Will. Akroma's Will is a 4-mana white instant. It says, choose one, or if you have your commander, choose both. Creatures you control gain flying, vigilance, and double strike until end of turn. Or creatures you control gain lifelink, indestructible, and protection from all colors until end of turn. So this is a card that we ranked very highly. I believe we have all S's and A's on this one. Richard, you came in as A. Everyone else has this as an S tier card. This is one of my favorite white finishers. I play this in like every white creature deck. is it really life gain, though? That's my only problem, is I feel like when I cast this, most of the time my opponent just dies and the game ends, and I'm not really using it to buffer my life total, but I guess it can be used that way. But really good card. Do you play it as incidental life gain, though?
I mean, I think there's an episode where I, because of this card, I use a Chroma's Will, I think it was a couple seasons ago. I was able to gain all that life, and then I was able to survive the crackback, right? Like, swing, remove one person. My life total is so high that it just, you know? Because the double strike or whatever, all of that is just so good on a Chroma's Will. But I kind of agree with you in that this is not a life gain spell. This is a win con spell. It is everything at the same time. It is a life gain spell, but it's also a protection spell. It's also a win con. So I don't view it as a life gain spell for when I add it to my deck. This is a closer. I'm not just using this to gain a couple of life, like an Essence Warden or something like that.
Yeah, I've always added it to my decks as a finisher, but the life gain does matter more than a lot of the other keywords on here, because There are plenty of times, like Krim said, where maybe you don't have enough power to kill everyone at the table. You're going to gain enough life that you will likely survive to get another turn afterwards, even if you can't kill everyone right then and there. So I think the life gain is pretty relevant on it, even though that's not why you would necessarily add it to a deck.
Yeah,
I'll go ahead, Richard.
I was going to say, like, it's not a life gain card, but does the incidental life gain put it over the top of other finishers? I actually don't play this. I was actually debating A or B, but I felt
really
weird.
You're not a
believer. I never play this. Like, indestructible, 4 mana. That's been power crept. It dies to Farewell still, right? Dies
double to, strike, like, though.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Seth. If you got Spirited Companions and Soul Wardens, this flying double strike.
Yeah,
you
gotta
end the game, right?
Yeah.
Like,
Richard,
you gotta have big
off
points
of the Soul
to get it done, right? So I actually prefer Moonshaker Cavalry. So when I need a finisher for my white deck, it's usually Moonshaker, and I actually don't play a Chroma's Will, and the life gain is not enough to fix it for me, right? Because usually all my creatures are too small, like it's not even performing its job as a finisher, whereas the Moonshaker will do its job as finishing someone off. So I prefer that, but I do think the life gain is relevant, right? Like Krim said, you kill someone, you buffer your life, and you survive the crackback, and the game continues. Because usually when you swing out in Commander, either everyone's dead, therefore you win. But if everyone's not dead, you're going to die in the crackback, like, immediately. Yeah. And this gives you that amount. I just don't value this indestructible 4 mana thing anymore. Like, it just does not do enough for me.
What about the protection part? I agree with the indestructible. Sure, that's been power crept. But the protection from all colors pushes so much damage through.
Yes.
Because there's just so many people that can't block that,
but,
right?
Yeah,
whereas
Moonshaker only play
flying, one. Like, the flying.
Okay.
Like, the flying is close enough, right? Like, usually flying is enough. But yes, the protection helps you too. You can push through all that damage.
I think in some ways this exemplifies what you are looking for in a great commander life gain effect, in that it isn't just life gain. Like, I think that's really what I want in life gain effects. A lot of the time are cards that are gaining life, but can also be a finisher and can also be bad board protection or can also force through some damage. So I think that's why a Chroma's Will is easy S tier for me. And I think
that's why.
Can I counter this point?
What's the counter, Richard?
Here's the counter, Seth. So a Chroma's Will is only cast when you're ready to win. Okay? Like you're like, I got lethal. I'm going to Chroma's Will, and hopefully there's no fog, and I win. It's not actually really gaining you life. Like, you know what I mean?
I definitely have done that. I definitely have cast a Chroma's Will just because, like, I will gain enough life that I won't die, and I probably take a person out.
That's kind of coping, right? What usually will happen is in the mid-game, someone overruns and smacks you, and you just die. And you're like, well, I didn't have 4 mana up to gain life, right? Like, that's why, like, the fog is so important, right? Because it's 1 mana, and you can do it when you don't expect it, you know? It's like almost like Ink Shield, right? Like, if you're going to hold up 4 mana to a Chroma's Will defensively, it's very difficult. So I feel you don't use this as a way to prolong the game, right? This is like you're going to win, and maybe you're even winning a little more, right? But, like, it's cast when you're going to win. So I feel it serves a different purpose than something like Soul Warden, where it buffers your life total and ensures you just don't die randomly in the mid-game.
I actually agree with that, but you still get the upside of being able to gain life off of it. Like, you could use it to gain life. It's not optimal or how it's normally played, but some percentage of the time, you might play it just to, like, gain some life and deal some damage or try to protect your board. But I play it like you do, where, like, I just hold this in hand and play it like
you just
to try to win the game.
You just cross your fingers and hope you don't die, right? Like, I'm not casting this to gain 10 life. Like, I hope you don't kill me, right?
It's a tough, yeah. It's tough to play it that way. But I still, and this is, I guess, kind of illuminates why this is a hard ranking, because a lot of these cards aren't super clear in that they gain life, but they also do other things. And how do you value that is going to be, I think, really interesting as we go through the rest of the cast.
If because of this discussion, and I agree with Richard's points about, like, you know, I'm not really casting this to gain life, I don't know if I would rank this as an... Okay, so it is a very good card. I have ranked it as an S. But it is, but by S, I'm talking about it is a good life gain spell. But it
you mean
is
you
not
ranked
a
it
good...
like for its other abilities and not the life?
Yeah, I really spell, ranked right? it for it because it's a finisher, right?
So okay,
yeah.
But case, don't we have to do it like that? Because
we
if
have
we
to
don't,
do it like that.
If we don't do it like that, if you're not a dedicated life gain deck, you're not going to run cards that just gain life, probably. So you have to you probably have to have other effects tied to your cards that gain life. Like we were already talking about the Soul Warden, and it triggers all your other white shenanigans, right? So, like, you have to, like, have that kind of stuff in mind. Otherwise, if it's just, like, I play this and I gain some life, it's like, okay, that's a synergy piece that you didn't put in your deck. So, yeah,
so,
I think we
so
have to do
it that way.
You're saying
that it is... Okay, so it is a valid S then, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, because...
I think so.
I think the life gain is...
adding to its ranking, right? I mean, there are other cards on this list that are very strong where the life gain aspect is kind of meh, right? But you're like, well, it's adding something, and maybe it puts it over the top of its competitors, right? Maybe you actually play this over Moonshaker because you care about the life gain.
So let's leave it in S for now. If we want to change it in the future, we can. But I want to move on to a card that I think is going to be equally controversial and also plays into this conversation about, is it actually life gain? What is this card doing? And this is the Crim Special, the Meat Hook Massacre. So Meat Hook Massacre,
yes!
It is a double black in X enchantment. When it enters the battlefield, each creature gets negative X until end of turn. And when a creature you control dies, each opponent loses a life. When a creature an opponent control dies, you gain one life. So this we started off with me giving it a B. Richard and Krim both gave it S's. Morgan came in at an A, so I guess we'll stick it in between in the A's for now. So this is another card, like... Are you playing this for life gain? Are you playing this because it's a Wrath? I view this as a good in specific deck cards. I view the Wrath mode is too expensive, so I like it in, like, Sack decks, Aristocrat decks, but I don't play it like a Damnation, and the life gain hasn't been enough for me to make up for the fact that the Wrath mode, I think, is kind of overcosted. So I don't view it as a black staple that I play in every deck. I play it in specific decks, but you guys are way higher on it than I am, so convince me that this is an S-tier card, Richard and Krim and Morgan.
Everything is indestructible in the current year. That just has that attached to it.
That's true.
And on top of that, like, the ability to just give everything negative -1/-1 doesn't actually feel that bad. Like, I feel like more every game I've played, I have never felt like it costs too much to Wrath. Because most of the time, I get rid of all the things that clutter up the board anyways. And it's able to sweep the board, or at least most of it. And most of the things I care about go with it. On top of that, Meat Hook Massacre rewarding me in black for killing my opponent's creatures by healing me. Now that I can do. Right? Like, even if I just, like, Meat Hook for, like, 3. X is 3. And I pick off a bunch of Saproling tokens or plant tokens. Do you know how much life I just gained right there? That is so much life. Like, it is ridiculous. And then if I lost some creatures, I may have drained you, but that part's irrelevant. To me, the main thing is that I can kill creatures left and right. And maybe it's because it's my playstyle that takes advantage of that part. But, like, Meat Hook Massacre rewards me for all my removal.
I definitely remember games where I'm like, why is Krim at 50 life? Like, we're on turn 8. Krim should be at, like, 20 now. And then I'm like, wait a minute. He's had a meat hook on the battlefield all game.
And I'm also sorry, Morgan, first off, my bad, because I know that's an editing nightmare. But on top of that, sometimes combat happens and I don't even have to do anything. And I just gain life because y'all just duke it out with each other.
We all have our own demons to fight, and mine are drain effects. So the Meat Hook Massacre, I agree with Krim that X doesn't have to be very high for it to feel worth it, because a lot of the times you just need to get like the clutter out of the way, get the chump blockers out of the way, in which case X might not have to be very high. But I think a lot of decks can play it as a clean Wrath, because like you're like, okay, but X might have to be a lot. Okay, you're in black. You're in like the coffers color, or maybe you're playing a Nykthos deck or something. Or if this isn't a Golgari deck, you could just ramp the good old fashioned honest way with rampant growths and three visits and open the ways and whatnot, right? So you can actually get X to be pretty high in a decent amount of decks. But even then, if it's just an enchantment that's staying on the battlefield that's draining here and there, that's honestly enough to kind of put it out of the way. I think a card that is really kind of fits that same category that I don't think it's on our list today is I think it's Suture Priest, right? It's like a soul warden for your side, but then when your opponents have creatures, then they lose life. I think this kind of plays a similar role where it's just a little bit of incidental damage here and there, a little bit of life gain here and there. So it probably kills some creatures when it comes down, and then it gets to stick around and gain some life and do some damage. And I think it's worth it. I don't think you jam it in every black deck, but you can play it in, I think, most black decks, and it will put in work.
But Suture Priest only heals you when you play something, right?
Krim doesn't want to play creatures. He just wants to heal yours.
It's no soul warded. This is like the third best Wrath in black. I don't know what you guys are smoking. And
man, really love it.
It's only because of the life gain. Like, if you remove the life gain aspect of it, it's just Black Sun Zenith, and no one cares about that card, right? Like, Black Sun Zenith is actually better because it adds counters and, like, permanently shrinks, so if you miss the Wrath. But it's because you slam this down, you gain 10 life, right? Stuff happens, another board wipe goes off, you gain another 10 life, right? And then if your opponent is so scared by this, they fire off removal to kill the Meat Hook Massacre, you don't care because you already Wrathed and gained 10 life, right? So
yeah,
this actually... is the third, like, it's a Toxic Deluge, Blasphemous Edict, then Meat Hook Massacre, right?
Man,
like
damnation, like, Richard, damnation. You always damnation. Leave out damnation.
Oh my,
damnation is not.
I've never played damnation.
I don't think damnation.
Really, none of you
play
damnation
anymore.
Wow,
I'm starting to take out.
Maybe
damnation.
I'm just a boomer. Yeah, I guess I'm just a boomer. Boomer Black
Wrath. I love damnation. That's got a special spot in my heart, but not anymore. Richard's right, though. All the things he just mentioned. Again, a key point is that it's so cheap and so versatile, and you don't even have to do stuff sometimes to just get that life gain. You just sit there, and people will just do it for you.
No one keeps track, right? You just keep...
Yeah, no one keeps track.
You're like, why are you so high? What's going on? Right? You're like, yeah, don't worry.
Yeah, you're probably right. I have seen people just run it out on turn two for two mana and have it still be worth it, which I guess is a testament to the fact that the life gain has to actually... It has to actually be good, right? Like, the life gain has to be good, because then you're not wrathing anything at all and you're still doing it. So, all right, so where are we putting this one? Are we arguing it should be... alongside Akroma's Will in the A tier or the S tier, or is it like high A?
It should be above
Akroma's.
I would technically,
by everything that we're talking about today, I would say it's higher than Akroma's.
Really? You'd have the number one card so far. Okay.
So if you remove life gain off Akroma's Will, everyone would still play it. If you remove the life gain off Meat Hook, no one would play it.
That's
right.
Fair. But for for life gain purposes and in black, I think because it has the life gain tax, it's so good.
All right. Well, we'll put it. I can't put it the number one card because I had it in the B tier and we had another A tier.
As the control of the tier list, you're supposed to be neutral, Seth.
All right. We'll put it number one. You got it. You guys win. You'll win.
You got to find another card to take its place.
All right. So y'all love Wraths that gain life, apparently. So let's talk about another Wrath that gains life in Fumigate. So Fumigate, 5 mana Wrath in white. You blow up all the creatures, and then you gain a life for each creature that was blown up that way. So if there's 10 creatures, you gain 10 life. If there's 20, you gain 20. If there's 0, you gain 0. So an overcosted Wrath that gains you some amount of life. Ranking-wise, Richard hates this card, D tier. Morgan and Krim came in at the C tier. I put it in the B tier because I do actually play it in life game decks.
I'm putting it in the C.
Yeah, man, this is not the same card. These are not the same cards.
They're roughly the same, right? You kill some stuff, you gain some life. They're pretty much the same. Okay, what? Well, then explain to me, why is this so much worse? Why, for the viewers out there, why is Fumigate so much worse than Mihawk Massacre, even though they both gain life and clear the board?
The biggest thing for me is that if you just pay one more mana in white, you have all of the really flexible board wipes, or you have like board wipes that you can control more.
Like Asteric Hands and Farewells, that kind of stuff.
Exactly. Like, and you what? You want to just pay one less life and gain some amount of life? It doesn't hit indestructible creatures. It doesn't give you the modality. So I would rather almost always, I gave it a C. I didn't give it a D. I would still play this in life gain decks. But even then, like, I'd still rather just play the Farewells and the Austere Commands because they're more flexible. Or you also just get into like the Organic Extinctions and stuff, the like really one-sided board wipes and stuff. So I just, 5 mana, destroy all creatures, gain some life, just doesn't sound good.
I played in my Hope deck as a meme, but like in reality, I know this card is in a game. Meathook Massacre will gain you so much more life than this one-off spell that is also clunky. Which is like why I'm okay with Meathook costing more to mass sweep, because it gets around indestructible, like Morgan had mentioned, right? There's lots of things that just get indestructible passively now. So I like something that can get around it, and on top of that, sit around all game. You'll feel the effects of a Meathook Massacre, and on top of that, like Richard mentioned a little bit earlier, Meathook Massacre, more often than not in most games, will fly under the radar, because no one will think much about it until you're at like a million life.
It's true. I think that's the big difference, right? Is the difference between Meathook sits around and gains life all game, this is a one-shot, and... yeah, Fumigate's not especially efficient as far as Wraths go. White has some really good Wraths, and this is just like a little overcosted for what it does. But Richard, you hate this card the most out of all of us. Why do you hate it so much?
Okay, if you said Richard, next week's theme is Wrath.deck, where everyone plays 30
Wraths.
Wait,
you're still not going to play it?
I'm not even sure this makes it.
No!
And not because I'm metagaming saying like there's no creatures, right? But like literally if I just ranked the best white sweepers.
Wow.
This is probably like 20th or something, right? Like as opposed to in black, Meathook is actually just straight up the third. But like Morgan said, there's all the sweepers that sweep everything, right? And the ability to sweep enchantments, artifacts, graveyards, chances are it'll save you more life than whatever the heck Fumigate is gaining, like 5, 10, right? And unlike Meathook, which gains you life for the rest of the game, like Fumigate would actually have to gain you like probably like 2 to 3 life per creature dying to like make up for that. So it's just bad. And white has so many better Wraths that I would just never play this. Even in my life gain deck, I wouldn't play this.
That's right? What I was going to ask. Even
the
in
life
gain
pieces are going away when you Wrath. So like, I don't even know what you're doing. Like the best is, I guess, Hope. You Fumigate, then play Hope. But it's so cope there as well. Like,
do you think it's good in the Hope deck, Grim? Or is it actually just...
Oh, no, it's terrible. I just love it.
It's a flavor inclusion.
yeah. All right. It's probably got to be D tier then. If you all...
Do you really think it's
in Hope
after
you,
all is said and done, Seth? No way, right?
So my argument was purely that I think it's okay in life gain decks. Like, I play it in, if I'm just dedicated to gaining life, like the Hope deck or something, I think Fumigate's fine. I think it's not the best at what it does, but it's not so bad that you can't play it. And I think it's, like, reasonable if all you care about is gaining life. That said, the more we talk about it, I would probably put it in a C tier now. It would probably be my vote. So I think it's probably worse than a B tier, because I don't even know if I play in every life gain deck. Although I do think Richard's maybe slightly too harsh. I don't think it's not the 30th Beth, Wrath in white.
Okay, here's the trap that everyone falls into, which I know people love, right? Like, I'm playing a life gain deck. Let me put cards that have the word life gain on them, and I synergize. Right, but
you
I'm
do
like
Scryfall Search.
When you Fumigate and you get your synergies off, it's still worse than the staple Wraths. Like the Farewell will outperform the Fumigate even with all your synergies, right? Which is why it sits in the D tier, right? Like our Revelation is still better than whatever synergies you had with Fumigate and Life Gain, which is why it sucks, right? Like it has to be some insane synergy that overtakes Farewell, right? But it doesn't, right?
You've convinced me. You convinced me. It's going in the D tier. We're putting it in the D tier. You'll win. I'm gonna stop. I won't play it anymore. You did it.
You never played it. Stop kidding yourself.
I played it once. I did, I promise. We need a palate cleanser here. Let's play a card that I think we all agree is very good and one of my most played life gain spells, which is Shadow Sphere, our first equipment today. Shadow Sphere, one mana equipment, equip creature, gets +1/+1 trample and lifelink. You can pay one to make permanents your opponent's control lose hexproof and indestructible until end of turn, and you can pay two to equip it to something. And this is a card that we ranked very highly. S's across the board, except for Richard, came in as an A. And this is my go-to. If I'm building a deck that has a lot of creatures in it, doubly so if it has like Urza Saga or Trinket Mage effects, the new Tezzeret, something that can find one mana things, this is my go-to incidental life gain effect. Like, it's really cheap. It's super efficient. Equipping it's only two mana. And every once in a while, you get some value out of making stuff lose hexproof and indestructible, which doesn't come up often, but every once in a while it does. So I play this in basically any deck that has a lot of creatures, and I think it's worth it. But what do you guys say about Shadow Sphere?
My guy, let me ask you, did you say doesn't come up often? Have you seen the cards in 2025? Dude, everything has indestructible and hexproof.
Honestly,
would you rather pay a bunch of mana into Meat Hook Massacre to get rid of indestructible, or would you rather pay one mana to activate the Shadow Spear and then just cast a normal Wrath? Like,
so. It is always
Meat Hook is a different world, but I will say, this card, when it came out, there's a reason I was high on it, and I bought so many, and it was like a couple of dollars.
Ooh.
And I said that this would be just an auto-include in most decks, because I'm tired of everything getting hexproof and indestructible, and it's just really cheap, efficient life gain, and it still stands the test of time in the current year, right? Okay, well, it did only come out 5 years ago, but the main thing is, it's so good! It's still so good, and I am so happy I have so many Shadow Spheres.
The funny thing is, I play this in literally every deck I can, and I don't think I've ever activated the lose hexproof and indestructible ability. And I still think it's S tier. I should play it in every deck. If that text wasn't on there, I would still put it in S tier. But Richard, what do you think? Like, does that text matter? Where are you at with Shadow Sphere?
No, I put zero value in it because all my Wraths get indestructible. I play no single target removal, right? So like, I don't care about that second mode. What I care is strapping my big beefy 8/8. Or, you know, my Voltron Commander with this and going to town. It's searchable off Urza Saga. Having said that, I don't play it that often. I only play it when I have, like, a very big commander. And I have some equipment synergies. Because if I'm just using it strictly to gain life, then there are better cards, in my opinion. So it's only when I care about Trample and Lifelink, which usually means, like, I have really, really big creatures, like... my commander's going to get really big, and I want to give it evasion and then gain life on top of that.
Richard, Seth,
that's fair.
Guys, I think I figured it out why you don't ever see that. You don't activate that mode because the people don't cast the card into the thing that obviously nullifies
it. That could be. Like,
yeah.
No one knows the Meat Hook is coming, so they cast all their things or they pass holding up their indestructible spell. But you have to play Shadow Spear at sorcery speed. And then everyone knows that, they're not safe, and then they won't play their things into it, right?
If you have a hexproof thing, why would you run it out until you can answer the Shadow Sphere? Yeah, that makes
sense.
So this
is a counter spell.
I will also say.
It stacks.
No, I guess. Is it stacks?
Yeah, this stacks.
I will say, Grim, I think you like it more, too, because you play way more targeted removal than I do. And I think if you're a targeted removal believer, then this goes up in value because you can snipe some of that stuff. And if I don't play much targeted removal, like, it's just not as valuable. But I can see why it'd be really good in a Grim deck. So are we in agreement? S tier? Like, I know, Richard, you were a little low on it, but
I'll give you guys S tier.
It's
got to
be, right? We'll put it at the bottom for you.
And mana efficient.
It's like a card, though. Yeah. It's a card that gets swept up in your farewell, right? Like, it's...
Man.
There's a world where you play it, gain 4 life, and it disappears. You know what I mean? Like, and you're down a card, and you just gain 4 life, right? There's
the
a world where
missed.
That happens.
Farewell
especially
every 5 seconds.
If you're like... if you're like a Voltron deck or something, you're like deathly afraid of Shadow Sphere. People will actively hunt it down and remove it, right? So like you're kind of going negative by playing it. So it has uses, but I don't know.
Let's Let's move on. Let's move on to another one. And we're gonna do a twofer here. We haven't talked about any green cards yet. And green can gain some life. And these cards are similar enough, and we rank them, I think, similarly, and I think we actually rank them literally together, that we're just gonna do them together. And those cards are Disciple of Fraelis and also Lifestream's Blessing. So Disciple of Fraelis, it's a MDFC, which I think makes it the better of the two, but it's a 6 mana on the front side for a 3/3 when it enters. You can sack another creature. If you do, you gain X life and draw X cards, where X is a creature's power. And then Lifestream's Blessing. This one, I almost don't know if it should be on here exactly, but it's 6 mana, instant. Draw X cards, where X is the greatest power among creatures that you controlled as you cast this spell. And you can foretell it for 5 mana. And if you cast it from exile after foretelling it, you gain twice that life, twice the life of the power of the creature, your greatest power creature. So pretty similar, where you're drawing cards equal to the greatest power creatures you control. Disciple of Fraelis, you got to sack the creature. Lifestream's Blessing, you got to foretell it first or somehow cast it from exile to be able to actually gain life off of it. Otherwise, it's just card draw. We gave these all SSS in an A on these from Morgan came in at the A. I play Disciple of Fraelis in like every deck. The other one, Lifestream's Blessing, I do play. I just play it like a spell, though. I don't try to foretell it and cast it from exile to gain life, honestly. I just cast it like a Rishkar's Expertise and draw a bunch of cards, so I don't think I've ever gained life off of it. But it's cool that you have the option. But where are you guys at with these green life-gaining card draw spells?
You don't play the foretell part of Lifestream's Blessing. First off, this card is under $1, and it's wild to me. But second off, that foretell mode is very nice, because this has the beautiful word on the text box. See that? It says instant. And I love my instants. This card is so sweet, and you only tuck it away for 2 mana, and you stock it up and sew it away for a later creature,
so
right?
That's so worth it.
It's, and that also, it's alone so good.
It's also on cast, so even if like they removed your biggest creature or something, you still get
it. It is, I think, the best. Maybe the best Rishkar's Expertise effect, being an instance, really, really, really huge on it, and the way it's worded is really good. So I think it's very good. I just don't put much value in trying to foretell it first, but maybe I should focus on foretelling it. Are you a foreteller, Richard? Do you try to foretell it?
If I have leftover mana, sure.
Right, yeah.
you know what I mean? Like, if I'm not doing anything, of course, right? But your ideal green curve is rampant growth into, you know, open the way, open path or something into, like, actually play to the board. So you don't have time to play this, but obviously if you're passing the turn with 2 mana up, then you go ahead and foretell this. But usually you're just snapping it off on 6 and like very happy with what you're getting. I would play. A Disciple is like on another level, right? Like Blessing is still a card. Disciple is literally a land. Like, it doesn't even cost you a slot in your deck. So Disciple actually goes everywhere. And then Lifestream's Blessing comes in when you need Soul's Majesty.
Those
Rishkar's
big green
Expertise, Last March of the Ents. Like, when you're playing those kind of effects, then Lifestream's is an auto-include as well.
If Lifestream's did not have the life gain text on there, I think it would be, I would play it just as much. I think that, like, I don't think it, I play it because I'm drawing a ton of cards with it. Actually, the same of Disciple of Fraelis is like an MDFC that draws me a ton of cards. That's enough.
I didn't even know it gained life.
Nice bonus. I kind of, I don't know if
your commander's Galta and you gain like 20 life. That's crazy.
But I drew 20 cards. I drew 20 cards. But I think Disciple of Fraelis definitely S tier. Where are we putting Lifestream's Blessing now that we talk about it? I feel like it can't be in the same tier as Disciple of Fraelis. It's not as good, right? It's got to be a little bit below
bottom
it. So where do we put this one?
A, somewhere in there. It's still very somewhere.
Lifestream's Blessing is like an A.
So if,
but okay. I think it is very, very good, and it can't, it's criminal, it's under $1.
If I could say, the only reason I gave these an A instead of an S is because there are so many similar effects, and I think that there are, some decks you just run all of them. Why not? Why not just deck yourself? But I think that they're all slightly different enough that you really have to think about which ones you want to play. And I don't think it's fair to say any of them are strictly better than each other. And also, Disciple of Fraelis, I would say the one notch against it is you have to sacrifice the creature. If you want big creatures on the board and now you got rid of your big creature, you don't have a big creature anymore. So I think most of the time that's still worth it. But
Morgan trying to close out the game instead of drawing cards.
Trying to win.
So I'm just saying that they're all different. They're slightly different enough that it's worth considering the minute differences across them. I think they're all great, and I would play some number, if not all of these style of cards in my big green decks, but I just thought that was worth mentioning. That's
you
why
actually
I
don't play all of them? I feel like if I play one, I play all.
My Yargle and Multani deck, I run all of them, but yeah. If I'm just playing like any other green deck, I would run like some of them, not all of them necessarily, because at this point, there are so many of them.
Right, we're getting close to the point where you actually have to prioritize a little bit, unless you're, because we're getting up to, I think, close to 10 of them now. There's probably 6 or 7, and they just keep adding more. So we are going to get to the point soon where you are going to have to prioritize. But are we good with this? Frailes in the S tier and a tier down for Lifeshroom's Blessing. We'll accept that. All right, let's go with a pure life gain. Krim, I know you know this one because this card spiked from like bulk to $20 because of a commander you really like, which is Hope Estiub. And that is Beacon of Immortality. Beacon of Immortality is 6 mana. Instant speed, double target player's life total, which by the rules does count as life gain, and then you shuffle it back into your deck. So if you're at 40, you go up to 80. If you're at 1, you go up to 2. Not great for 6 mana. It really depends on what your life total is. This is a card that we gave Bs across the board. I view this as really good in Hope, essentially, in life gain decks. If your deck is a Bilbo or Hope and it's about how much life can I gain, this is one of the cards that can gain you the most life. But it's definitely not a Soul Warden that you play in every deck because, oh, I'm going to gain incidental life because it's just way too expensive and way too risky because if you get beat down before you cast this, it's just not going to gain you that much life.
I can
life,
double
but...
my 2 life to 4.
Got him.
No, I this is a life gain spell, but it's secretly a kill condition, right, in Hope.
Yeah.
So that is why I think this card is really good. This is just one of those things where it's a very narrow card and has its very specific homes.
Also good with like, I don't the like Sanguine Bond kind of combo stuff, right? Like whenever you gain life, opponent loses. So you got to be doing stuff like that, I think. Does anyone play generically? Morgan or Richard? Do you guys, or is it a combo piece basically?
See, every time I try to play it fairly, which I have before, I have tried playing them fairly, everyone just fears the combo. It doesn't matter. I could be like, look at my deck list. I swear I'm not playing the combo.
I will show you every card.
They don't care. So I don't play them fairly anymore.
Yeah, it does nothing. like mana is
too expensive.
Much. Yeah, it needs to kind of win the game. And that only
which
that,
it
that's
does.
A combo, right? Yeah, I mean, if you combo with it,
in the right deck.
Great.
All right, let's move on to a card that I'm not sure why this card is on the list. Phil added this to our spreadsheet before taking off on vacation. I'm not sure why we're talking about this card. The Haunt of Hightower. It's a 6 mana 3/3 legendary vampire with flying and lifelink. Whenever it attacks, defending player discards a card. Whenever a card is put in opponent's graveyard from anywhere, put a +1/+1 counter on Haunt of Hightowers. So this card, I gave it a... Oh no, where did it go? I gave it a C, which I regret, and I'm moving it to D as we speak. Richard also gave it a D. Morgan and Krim gave it B's.
What?
Why is this card? Why did you put this card in?
I have a confession to make. I could let Phil take the heat, but I was the one who added this card.
Oh, I thought it was Phil.
Did
sorry,
you buy
Morgan.
50 Haunt of Hightowers? What's going on?
Yeah, this is
explain
the long con
me,
with the MTG Finance. No, okay, so I have a buddy who plays this in his Garuda Mill deck, and every time this comes down, it actually puts in work because it gets huge because it's as you're milling, it's getting gain big. It only needs 1 or 2 attacks to gain so much life that it makes a big difference in whether or not you can take him out efficiently. So it's 6 mana. So like I wouldn't play it in many decks, but specifically because it's a Garuda deck,
mana.
So you have to But, so I wouldn't play it very often, but it does get so big so fast, especially in like mill archetypes and stuff, that it can gain enough life. And mill decks also just draw a lot of hate, even though they don't necessarily deserve the hate. So that life gain actually is semi-relevant, right? Like Krim's Hope deck, the fact that it's gaining life buys you more time because everyone's like, oh, I can't believe Krim's milling me. So it kind of bounces out. It's not a great card, but I thought it would be funny to bring it up since no one talks about this card.
I got me by surprise. I got to ask you, Krim, when I think of mill, I think of Krim. What do you think of this good in mill theory?
Well, that's because I do it. It's in my Lazav deck. And
there's two of them.
Yeah, so like it's in my Lazav deck. It cooks, dude. It cooks so hard in the right deck. And it's 6 mana, but in reality, I'm never actually casting this. I'm either copying it from the graveyard or doing something, some kind of shenanigans and reanimating it, right? But this card in the right shell is a win condition. But that is why I give it a B, because it is, it's not real. This is going to be like a Chroma's Will for me. It's not your traditional life gain spell. It's not my early mid-game life gain spell. This is my win condition, right? I am going to kill you with this, much like I will with a Chroma's Will. So is it a good life gain card? Would I have put it on here? No, I don't know how this got on the list, but I will say that it is awesome to see, and I do play it, but it's a win condition, not for a life gain spell.
Has this changed your vote, Richard? We're both at D's. Has anything Morgan or Crib said made you want to bump it up?
I played a Haunt of Hightower deck on Commander Clash, I'm pretty sure. This was one of my
meme... As your commander?
Yeah, as my commander. One of my meme commander
decks. Oh, there's your problem.
And it's still a D. You know, I can put it into my Thoracle deck or my Yuriko deck, and it's going to do work because the rest of the deck is going to carry it so hard. So I don't buy the Garuda argument.
What about Lazav?
It's literally like, I don't know, man. It's like Bane Slayer Angel or something. You know, it's just a big lifelinker that needs to untap, swing, and connect. And I don't think you're putting this in. But it's a funny meme finisher. I'm sure you can build around any card and make it a finisher, right? So, yes.
I don't think you guys have changed my grade. I'm keeping it at D personally. But I can see, now that you've described it, how, like, in the right situation on the right board, say, how this card could pop off, which is something I hadn't really thought about before. Like, I could see this with Garuda, like, one-shot killing someone or something. So, and getting a huge amount of life to make it hard for anyone to kill you on the backswing. So I could imagine scenarios where it would be good, but I'm still not going to put it in my decks, I don't think.
Well, this is one of the win conditions, though, in my mill deck. Like, this is the card I'm looking for and hoping to mill. So I am going to say it is a powerhouse when it's not your commander.
Look, if I have to build this Xenomorph deck, it's coming in, okay?
Okay.
It looks like an alien. I don't know why. It's a vampire, but yes.
Well, we'll just split it. We had two Bs and two Ds. We're going to put it in the C tier and call it close enough. All right, let's move on to a white card, which is a card that I don't think I've seen C play on Commander Clash, but it was fairly highly ranked on EDH Rec, and that is Revitalize. Revitalize, 2-mana white instant, gain 3 life, draw a card. I had it as a D, Richard had it as a D, Krim has it as a D. Morgan, you came in as a C. Is this in your mill deck or something, Morgan? Is that, did your friend pop off with it? Okay.
No.
What do you think about Revitalize?
I mean, in a hope deck, right?
It's just like a bad cantrip. Like, if you're just like a deck that cares about cantrips, then like it probably crosses your mind. I don't know why it's so high on EDH Rec, but I think if you're a cantrip deck that has white, you might consider it. It's very good. If you're in blue, it probably doesn't make the cut, but yeah.
Seems you are right. I would consider it. As in, I would cast consider and surveil it to the graveyard and hope I don't draw it.
Because
this is so bad.
We need a 1-mana version of this. Once we get the 1-mana version, I think that would actually be a white cantrip that I would probably play. Like, 1-mana, gain 3 life, draw a card. Then we're actually talking 2-mana. I think it's just a little, it's a little too much mana. Even for the decks that would want it that are, like, slinging spells and stuff, I think it's just a little too pricey, but I don't know.
Yeah,
Anyone else have an argument?
I just built an Azorius cantrip deck, and this is not in there.
Oh,
so.
See, that's a sign it should be in the D tier, then.
It needs to be 1 Phyrexian white mana, and then I would play it, maybe.
Richard wants the free.
I think I've actually said this card. The Phyrexian mana is irrelevant. It pays for itself.
Yeah, the Aetherflux Reservoir decks, like, if you're playing mono white Storm, you could, like, be desperate and go here. But this is another classic example of people, like, I'm a life gain deck. This card cantrips. It doesn't cost me a card, you know, so I'll play it. But I'm like, it's 2 mana. Like, you don't typically load your blue decks of ops and considers and all those things, right? Because it's still a mana you're paying to cycle, right? Like, it's not costing you a card, but it's costing you a mana. And gaining 3 life randomly is probably not worth the 2 mana, even if you are a life gain deck.
I'm going to bump it down to a D.
All right.
I don't know why it's so high on EDH Rec.
It's going... Oh, I should say, so by high on EDH Rec, I went through like a few pages of the most popular life gain spell. So it's probably like the 100th most popular or something. But people do play it on occasion. All right, let's keep going. We got a few more cards to get through. Let's wrap it up with our final white card that we're going to talk about today. Or mono white card, at least. And this card used to be a Commander Clash staple, but that was a while ago. And that is True Conviction. So True Conviction, 6-mana white enchantment, says creatures you control have double strike and lifelink. And this is a card that got C's across, well, actually not C's across the board. I gave it a C, Richard gave it a C, Morgan gave it a B, Krim gave it a D. I feel like if we were doing this podcast 7 years ago, we would be putting this as like an A tier card, because I used to play this in all my white creature decks where this was just like one of my finishers. It would gain a ton of life, you get double strike, you play this. But since then, in the last 7 years, 10 years, however long it's been, white has just gotten so much better. Commander has gotten so much stronger overall. White has so many other finishers now, so many other ways to gain life, like Akroma's Will, for example. I don't think I put a True Conviction in my deck since like 2020 or something. But where are you guys at with True Conviction? Am I missing anything on this one?
So I put it a little bit higher because the problem we were talking about with the Akroma's Will earlier is that if you're like a little dude's white deck, right, that the one attack you get with the double strike and whatnot probably isn't enough. True Conviction, because it's an enchantment and gets to sit on the battlefield, assuming that you don't have to deal with the board wipe, or you are in white, you do have protection for against a lot of board wipes, because it's an enchantment, so some colors just straight up can't remove it, you actually get several uses out of that, quote, overrun effect. You do have to be pretty heavy in white because it's a 6-mana, 3 specifically white pips. So, you know, Richard could never play this in a deck now. But I think if you're just like a little dude's white deck, but you need some finishers, it's at least worth considering, especially if you have synergies with the lifelink, you have synergies with the enchantments. There are decks that I would still play this in. And I think in those decks, it's really good, and that is categorically a B, according to the criteria we've set ourselves.
Okay, that's
I don't
a fair
know
argument.
What deck would want this, personally, because of the power creep of where we are in 2025, right? Like, I think this is 6-mana, do nothing. this is like, there. You know how, like, Akroma's Will is 4-mana? Yes, obviously it's good, but it's hidden. It's concealed information, no one knows about it, and you can get people out of there. But, like, this is just going to sit on the board. It's obvious that it's going to be up to no good. On top
Wait,
of that,
you have
if they
no creatures by turn 6?
No. I mean, you can have all the creatures, but imagine you swing and I blow this up and then block. Right?
Like, sure.
But I think this is just most, regardless of these corner pocket situations, I'm talking about it's just 6-mana. And you have so many things you could be doing, like way earlier in the curve. There's so many better cards at this slot.
Where are you at? I know you used to play this a lot, Richard.
We played this before Akroma's Will was invented. Yep. Before Moonshaker was invented. I guess, I was going to say you play it budget, but it's like a $4 card. It's not even, it's not
really?
Even budget.
Yeah.
Maybe like if you're playing with enchantments or something, but like,
yeah,
double strike is just not enough. And you can't put this down. If you put this down early, everyone will kill you or it. You know what I mean? Like, if you don't have a strong enough board, you're not killing anyone, you can't play this, right? So you only play this when you can kill. And I already said Akroma's Will wasn't strong enough to finish to my liking. Like, that gives you way more stuff, right? Like, this is just double strike. That's not enough. Like, I think I would play Beacon of Immortality before I try the True Conviction. You know what I mean?
Wow.
I think more life can be gained with Beacon of Immortality than True Conviction.
I disagree with that. I my take is, I think True Conviction is still fine. I just don't play it anymore because I think there's just better things. So I would not be embarrassed to put this in a deck. And I think it would still, like, you play it, you swing, you gain a bunch of life, you gain a bunch of damage. I think it'll still do its job. I think there's just, for pretty much every deck, a better card to do that job now. So I just don't really play it anymore. But I don't think that means True Conviction is, like, bad. It's just, like, kind of got power crept a little bit. But it still gains life. It still gives double strike. But I think it is.
Chump, for me, farewell.
Yeah.
You gained 10 life. Good job, boys. Like, it doesn't finish. It needs needs trample or flying or something to help it actually finish, right?
This isn't going to sway Richard's opinion, but the double strike with the lifelink actually is nice, because however much life you think you're going to gain, you're actually going to gain twice that much life. But I know that's not going to sway anyone's opinion. I just wanted to point that out there.
I think the other thing that happened with this card is it just got way easier to kill enchantments. Like, from the time this was a staple for us to where we are now, black got enchantment removal. We got Besaiju, a channel land that blows up. Like, so it's just a lot harder for you to stick an enchantment long term than it was a while ago. But I think we'll keep it in the C tier. We're kind of quibbling a little bit. bit. None of us thought it was like a busted S tier card or anything. So we'll put it in the C. This Hightower cannot be C tier, can it? Every time I look at this Haunt of the Hightower, I'm like, why is this card?
Hightower is better than True Conviction. I will say that.
I will give Hightower the nod over True Conviction.
All right. We'll move it up. All right. Let's move on to the one land on our list today, which is Vault of the Archangel. Vault of the Archangel. It's a land. It makes a colorless mana, or you can pay 2 a white and a black, tap it to give creatures you control death touch and lifelink until end of turn. And this is a card that I think we all ranked very highly, if I can find it on here. Richard, what do you think about this one? You love the utility lands. Where are you at with Vault of the Archangel?
I don't even know why I put it at B. Let me put the C.
Whoa! What? No, you don't like it?
Never play this. Never play
really?
This. Really? I never played. Like, well, I don't know what. You have to be a go-wide token stack, and all you're using it for is, like, death touch. So what's the idea here? You're going to swing out with your team and gain a bunch of life, but because you spent 5 mana doing this, you don't have the mana to, like, Achromas or Moonshaker to, like, you know, really drive it home. So you're just, like, being annoying, attacking with, like, a bunch of medium-sized creatures with lifelink and death touch. It's like, it's not... I play a lot of colorless lands. It's not worth the colorless land slot to play the vault, I don't
Man,
think.
Man, that has me kind of shook. Because if Richard doesn't think this card is good, and he plays colorless lands like you wouldn't believe, that's definitely not a vote of confidence.
Like you have to be able to combo with the finisher. It's too much mana to do that, right?
my argument is the cost is low enough that it's actually worth including in most Orzhov decks. I think you got to be Orzhov, right? So you can't play it in monocolor because of color identity. I think once you get to 3, definitely to 4 and 5 colors, then I think there's just not enough room for this land because there's other colorless lands I want better. But I think in Orzhov in specific, I think this is worth running in basically any deck that's playing a bunch of creatures in Orzhov. Like, yes, you won't activate it that much. Yes, sometimes you're not going to gain that much life, but it still just offers value from the mana base. You can play defense with it. You can play offense with it. You can force through damage with it. You can buffer your life total. So I actually think it's still a very good Orzhov card. Richard, or Krim and Morgan, you gotta break the tie on this one. What do you guys think?
The opportunity cost is just so low. It's an untapped land. You could just activate it whenever. So a lot of the nice things I said about True Conviction, it's doubly so, if not more, with Vault of the Archangel, because it's just in your mana base. The opportunity cost is so low, and it's repeatable. Like, the part of what I said nice about True Conviction is that you can get multiple uses out of it. That's, like, the one thing you could say it's better about than, say, like, an Achromas Will or something. Vault of the Archangel is the same thing, except it's a land. And, you know, that we just... A lot of casual groups just don't touch lands. So it's even safer than like a True Conviction or something like that. The opportunity cost is so low. It's just an untapped land at the end of the day. So yeah, I think in most Orzhov decks, you could just play it.
We got to bust up the utility land tier list. And I guarantee you in Orzhov, I could rattle off like 20, 30 lands you'd want to play above this. And you're into the Richard territory of 2 basics.
Really?
Right? Like, you guys say this, but... Trust me, I max out my mana base with as much utility as possible, and cuts are always made, and there's never room for vault. You know what I mean? Like, there's... You're running the meme mana base of, like, 20 colorless sources and, like, 17 colored sources, and you still can't fit it. So, I don't know, man. Like, have we ever seen vault on Commander Clash after, like, 18 seasons? We've seen it, like, twice. You know, it's, like, very rare we ever see it.
Not in a while.
Right?
Yeah.
That's because... But that's only because we're doing themes every week and whatnot, right? So, like, but if
but
it were up to
freeze,
me, my
your
normal...
mana base, any Orzhov deck should be able to slot it in, right?
How often
I would
do
have
you
to
play?
Double check this.
Okay.
I would so have here, to double check the stats. I don't think people play Orzhov very often.
No, that might be part of it.
I have it as an S because obviously in my Mardu deck, my Humans deck, and my Mr. Negative deck, dude, this card is just a house, right? Because you either swing with it and you kind of put the opponent now and every other opponent in a situation where, hey, I either block and lose my board entirely, or they just get a free attack in. This essentially reads almost like Rogue's Passage for your team. Because if I just send like in that. A bunch of 1/1s, right? Like I have some combat rewarding trigger. Do you block or not? If you do, you lose your board. and I gain a ton of life. So no matter what, I feel like I'm in a win-win situation. You take my, you want to block you, you remove my 1-1s, great. But if you don't, I'm going to get a silly amount of combat triggers. I'm going to gain life either way. At the end of all of this, the only way I don't is if you fog me. And then this is just such a powerful combat trick and a defensive tactic as well. So for those exact same reasons, I can leave my team back, just a bunch of 1-1 poopers, and if you swing into that, they now all have death touch. So it just, if we don't swing into a simple spirited companion, why would someone swing into a spirited companion that has lifelink and death touch, right?
That's
so
true.
I think this card is an absolute powerhouse of a land. I love it so much that I bought the full art secret lair to just put in my three decks that could play it. My humans deck is so good because of it. It's the land I want all the time. And that's a three-color deck, and I've got, like, double white, triple white pips in that deck. So
wow.
I'm willing to break up the on-curve three-drop if it means that I can play this land. This is, like, my aggro land.
It's five mana. I just block you, Krim, and then either you just chump attacked or you spend your whole turn like trying to trade fairly by activating your land. Like, it's still,
but they're all chumps.
I'm all for
everything
it.
Everything of mine is all chumps, right? If I swing with an army of just 1/1 2/2s, that adds up. I gain
and
a lot of
my
life.
Solemn Spirit Companion.
But isn't that just worth it a lot of the time? Because because of the death touch, you're clearing out a lot of their board. If they want to block, that's fine. You're clearing out a lot of their board. Maybe they'd have the solemns and things that they want to die, but I think a lot of the time you're willing to make that trade. And then the lifelink, you're gonna gain enough life to combat the
I don't think you
and
would
they call you
on
it. You gotta go through with it. Right, otherwise you just chump attacked, right? So you got to spend your whole turn doing this.
I feel like you can get a lot of value out of not activating it, though, right? Isn't just like the threat of it enough to force through a decent amount of damage a lot of time? Because people are gonna be like, oh, well, if I do block, then they'll just do the death touch thing and then I'll lose my creature, so I guess I'm taking it. And then you can use your turn casting other things. So I think like maybe just the threat of like having this on the battlefield, attacking and then playing stuff post combat main phase, like. Maybe that's enough to make it good.
Someone send me a DM the next time we see Vault of the Archangel. You guys speak so highly of this card like we never, ever see, right? Like I get the theoreticals, but like it comes up so rarely that we don't ever put it in our deck, right? And we never
The real question is where does this leave us on this tier list? Like where are we actually putting this card? We got everything from S tier to C tier or D tier on this one.
I mean, it sounds like it's an A, right?
Rounded out to an A. Yeah,
Krim and I cancel out and it ends up in A. Yeah, even though
then we end up with the A's.
Clearly wrong.
Yeah. All right, wait, three more cards to go. Next up, we have Crypt Incursion. Crypt Incursion. This is a 3-mana black instant. It says exile all the creature cards from target player's graveyard. You gain 3 life for each card that is exiled this way. So Crypt Incursion, speaking of cards that I feel like I haven't seen much, it seems like on paper that this card could gain a ridiculous amount of life, but I've never seen it happen. And we are all over the place on this one, from Krim in a D to Richard in an A with me and Morgan in between at B and C. What do you guys think of Crypt Incursion? Richard, let's start with you. You're the highest on this. Sell us on Crypt Incursion.
Okay, fish memory. For sure, I've played this multiple times on Clash. Has been cast. In the Modo era, though. It's hitting like the darkness. Like, do you play darkness or you play Crypt Incursion, right? But it's basically 3 mana, gain, like, I don't know, 30 life, right? And it's graveyard hate, which, you know, I don't play any graveyard hate, but like this is a life gain spell with incidental graveyard hate. And I think doubling your life total at instant speed is a very strong card. It's like you're playing like any game and you use like all your items, all your special abilities, your ultimates, you kill the boss, and then a second health bar spawns. And you're like, oh my God, it's over, right? Like, that's what the instant speed life gain gives you. Like, no one knows it. They think they got lethal on you, and you just gain 30 out of nowhere, and you continue your merry way. Or you go down to 1 life, and everyone's like, ah, he's kind of dead. I'll finish him off whenever. And you're like, well, 30 life. I'm back in the game. You left me alone for so many turns. Like, here I am, right? So I think this card is great. You guys should all be playing it. And it's graveyard hate. You love graveyard hate, Krim.
Richard,
yeah, Krim.
You may not know. I thought y'all put this on here from my PTQ days. I'm talking junk rights. It's called junk back then before Abzan.
Yeah.
And I played Grixis Control, and I needed good graveyard hate to stop losing to stupid Angel of Serenity and all of his blinking. I played Crypt Incursion, and I played it in Korean so that because no one knew what it was, and the devil didn't know what it was in Korean. So I was a Crypt Incursion fanboy one, okay? But this card is too situational in Commander, okay? Like,
I disagree.
This card is way too situational. Yeah, there's going to be creatures and whatnot, but there's better graveyard hate, and there's better ways to gain life. I will agree with Richard. I do like the surprise element of, a second health bar does show up, and that is cool. But that is so situational. And if everything exiles, do you see creatures hitting the graveyard anymore? I've gone through a whole game, and after the amount of sweepers of Sunfall, and most of it by me, and then on top of that, I just don't even see anything in the graveyard except like maybe a land or two. And then and if it's not that, it's all the recursion that happens from creatures as well. So I just don't see creatures in graveyards that much. And because I have Ghost Vacuum.
Okay, so I think Ghost Vacuum. So I think the most obvious place that you would want to play this is like some kind of mill deck, right? Because if you're playing a mill deck, right, then obviously just playing this fairly is really good. But like, what if you're against a Reanimator deck or a Sun Titan deck or a Moldrotha deck? Then you really need to make sure you're running a significant amount of graveyard hate, because as you're milling people out, you're maybe fueling their fire. So this is a good safety valve against that. But honestly, I think if you're just like a black deck that can leave its mana up from time to time, it's even better than that, because three life per creature, there don't have to be that many creatures in a graveyard for you to gain enough life that it can make the difference between life and death. So I think I would slam this in any like mill style deck. But I think if you're just a black deck that can leave its mana up from time to time, I mean, three mana is steep, but I don't know. I think it can gain enough life that there doesn't actually have to be that many creatures in there. Like, post-Wrath, someone's got five creatures. This gains enough life, doesn't it?
So does it really feel good to waste a slot, though, for a gain 15? Sure. Right? Cool. Like, I don't know. You exile the creature and you gain 15. Is that enough? Like, I just don't feel like that's enough. Like,
barring a rest in peace, that's like the floor of the card. You know what I mean? Like, usually you're going to gain a lot more than that. But yeah, it is a whole card.
My concern is just consistency. Like, I know this card is powerful because it used to be like tech to fight against Dredge in Modern, and I definitely remember games
modern
where this game's like
this
60 life, and it's just like absolutely insane, and like it feels like you can't lose or after you've done it. But in Commander, I wonder, like, is it consistent enough? You can't really cast it early because you need the graveyard to be filled. We talk a lot about farewells and more exile wraths that are not actually letting the creatures go in the graveyard, so they're not in there. Like, I don't know. That would be my concern. I fear that there would be too many games where this is just like sitting in my hand for a big part of the game without really doing anything. But maybe that fear is unfounded because I haven't actually tried playing this card in a Commander deck. Does that not happen, Richard? Like, do you usually find a window where you can fire it off and get some value out of it?
Yeah. I mean, even if Farewell goes off, like, there's going to be second Wrath at some point, right? All the other stuff's going to hit the bin. Like, I don't know. I don't see it as a downfall, and it gains, like, so much life. It gains so much life. So I really like it. And then it also makes me responsible, you know, in case I run into a reanimated
deck.
you feel
like you're...
I'm like, I was like, responsible, right? Right. So I actually think it's really strong.
I can see bumping it up to B. I think it's at least good if you're like milling and so forth. It's got to be good there. So maybe we'll stick it in the B tier. We got a bunch of Bs and Crim down at the bottom with D. All right. Great Merchant of Asphodel. One of the most famous black cards in all of Commander. 5 mana. 2/4. When it enters, each opponent loses X life. Where X is your devotion to black, you gain life equal to the amount of life lost this way. Notice the way it's worded. You're going to gain life for each of your opponents losing life. So you gain a really huge amount of life off of Great Merchant of Asphodel. Great Merchant of Asphodel, I play it in pretty much every black deck. I got it at A. Crim has it as A. Richard and Morgan have it as B. It's good, right? Like, every black deck good? Or do you need to be a specific kind of black deck to want Grey Merchant to be your life gain?
I've started taking it out because it's too easy.
Yeah.
That's not the problem. It's that it's too easy. It's not that it's good. No one's going to dispute that.
Yeah. That's fair. I did that with Exsanguinate a while ago, and now I've started playing it again because I feel like it got a little less good now. But yes, it does kind of feel a little bit too easy.
Yeah, I think you need to be a black heavy deck. Like if you're like a four color deck, are you gonna play this? Probably not. So I think you need to be black heavy, which is why I have it. And you need to be a black deck that plays to the board. So if you're a black Wrath deck or something like that, then your pips might not be as high. But I mean, if you're just a black deck with an okay amount, a black heavy deck with an okay amount of permanence, I think it's a slam dunk. But I just think that's not most black decks.
So. I guess that's true.
I mean, let's say I just have Devotion of Gary plus like 3-5. That's more than enough.
That's a
you don't even have to be black heavy, and I play this in my board wipe deck because I know I can bring it back, right? So it's too easy. The card is too easy in multiplayer. Oh, my God.
I guess you don't need that many pips because you're gaining for each opponent losing life. So in that case where there is 5 pips, you're gaining, 15 or something, which is still... And then if you actually are black heavy, you can be gaining 40 life, 50 life pretty easily off this.
I also forgot it's a zombie. The fact that it's a zombie also makes it kind of crazy.
You can reuse it. You can reanimate it. You can rise from the dark realms, your graveyard back. It's easy, but like it also ends the game in a way that you didn't want it to end. You know what I mean? Like, let's say you're a black mill deck.
That's the problem.
Right? You're like, I'm a black mill deck. And then, I'm going to cast this gray merchant to stabilize. Oh, everyone's dead. Sorry, guys. Right? You're like, did you do what you wanted to do? Like, no. So it's kind of like insurrection or something like that, where you just randomly win the game and then you're like, So I would only play it in a dedicated drain deck or a devotion deck or something. Otherwise, it's too incidentally winning, if that makes sense.
We might have to do a podcast sometime about cards that overshadow the rest of your deck, because I think that's an interesting topic that we've never talked about. And I think Gary is one of those cards. And I think black is really bad at that, actually, because you get Exsanguinate, you get Torment of Hailfire, these cards that people like to just play for value. And then sometimes they just like end up taking over and winning the entire game. And you're like, I want it to be a zombie deck, but I actually just killed everyone because I drew coffers and have Torment of Hailfire. So I think Gary does have a little bit of that problem. So... B tier, I guess, is what we're ended up with. A.
It's funny because by everything we've just said, it should be an S tier.
It's really good.
It really is an S.
But our criticism is it's too good, if anything. So,
so where do cards fall that are too
maybe
good?
Maybe
right?
An S then. It kind of is too good.
It kind of is. All right, we have one card to go. First, I need to sneak the Siege Rhino up here. We're not actually talking about it. It's just an honorary on top of the S tier. S tier, pay no mind. This card, this is why we brought Richard into this this cast here. For one specific card, a one mana green sorcery, Fruition. It's from Portal. It says you gain a life for each forest you and your opponents have in play. So, Richard, you have used this card to great effect on Commander Clash. You gave it an S. Crib and Morgan gave it a B. I'm not a believer, I gave it a D, but maybe you can win me over to your side. Explain to me why Fruition is such a great life gain spell.
One mana, gain 28, 30, 40, I don't know, how many, it depends on how good at EDH your table is. If everyone's playing Mana Rocks and stuck on 3 mana, you've won already, it doesn't matter, you can have a dead card in your deck, right? But if everyone is abusing the mechanics of EDH and like green rampy all over the place, right? Then it's a one mana gain 30. And if I'm going to start the game at double my life total, great. If I can do that, as a surprise, you know, like I'm on death's door and I'm just like, surprise, guys, I'm at 40 again. It's great. And then you're like, well, Richard, you run no basics. Yeah, that's right. I run no basics, right? You tutor up a Yavimaya or someone else has a Yavimaya. And... you play all the land tutors that tutor non-basics, right? So you can Hour of Devastation, Open the Way, Omen Path, Journey, all that stuff. And one mana gain 30. That's like the best card in the game. And it really only struggles versus the fog slot. One fog, one fruition, two fogs. Like, what do we do here, right? Like, you can't overload on these effects, but like, so far I go one fog, one fruition. That's my go-to.
So you think Fruition is better than the second fog then in a green deck probably?
Yes, because the way you beat fog is you just chip them down, right? 5 damage a turn, 5 damage a turn, 5 damage a turn. I'm at death's door. I'm going to die, right? What you don't do is be like 6,000 damage in one turn. You're like fog, right? So when you get chipped out like that, fruition is like, okay, cool. You didn't commit to the board. I'm back to 40. What are you going to do now, right? So I really like having those two modes. And then you never know how to play against me, right?
So when I read fruition, I worry that it's like, okay, all it does is gain life, which already makes me a little bit sus of it, right? Like, yes, it could be a lot of life, maybe in the late game, but still, all it is gaining life. And I'm not sure what the bar is. We sometimes have arguments over, like, how much life would something have to gain for one mana to be worth it? And I don't know if fruition crosses that or not. So that's one concern. The other concern I have is, it feels like you got to build a combo for it. Like, not only need fruition, you need to tutor up another card to make fruition good. Then you got to wait till people play a bunch of lands to get them on the battlefield, and then you can gain a bunch of life. It sounds like a lot of hoops to jump through just to gain a bit of life. So that's what makes me skeptical of this card. Although I will say that when I've seen Richard actually played on Commander Clash, it has looked legitimately good. You have gained a lot of life with this card. So maybe my concerns are like unfounded, and in practice it just plays super fine because you're green, so you're tutoring up lands anyway, so it's not hard to find the Yav Maya, and then like this is just like super good. What about Crimson Morgan? Like, you guys are in the middle on this one. What do you think about fruition? Do you play it?
Well, I think the opportunity cost is low because green's pretty good at drawing cards. Green's pretty good at ramping. So if it's just like a dead card sometimes, okay, wait till you cast the Rich Card's Expertise, find something else to do. It's only one mana. My one mana wasn't the most efficient it could have been. I'm green. I have other mana. So the opportunity cost is low enough that I think you could play it. My concern is that if there's not a Yav Maya in play, you have to be mono green in order to justify putting it in your deck to up the likelihood that it gains enough life to be worth it. Now, green doesn't really struggle at finding lands, right? You have like Archdruid's Charm, you have Crop Rotation. There's definitely ways to find it, but then that's more slots in your deck. And now maybe you're a lands deck already and you are already going to do that, in which case, fine, this is probably worth it. But you can't rely on everyone else on your table playing green. You can't rely that someone else at the table is going to play the Yav Maya. So that's part of your deck that you have to dedicate to sort of a combo. And at that point, if you're doing this, you could just play a real combo and try winning the game. So I don't know. It's all right. The opportunity cost is low enough that I think you could play it in a lot of green decks. But
I don't think this is – it's fine in like the right decks, right? But I think this is just better to be a second fog. I would take a second fog over this card, personally.
It's what we got to think about. But, Seth, all the complaints you levied against this card are the same complaints that non-fog believers levy against fog. It rots in your hand all game. You know, it does nothing. It doesn't win you the game. A fog is basically gain X life, where X is the biggest attack coming at you.
Right.
If it's like 10 damage and you fog, well, fruition for 30 was better. You know what I mean? Obviously, if they hit you for like 5,000 lethal, then the fog is better than the fruition, right? But, you know, there are scenarios where one is better than the other, depending on how much life you gain. But fog is essentially a fancy life gain spell.
So I agree with
that. You can be proactive about it.
The part I get stuck on, though, is the, like, needing to have the Yav Maya. Like, you need a fog I can just cast and gain some amount of life, depending on how much I'm being attacked for. With this, I need, like, a second piece. It's Splinter Twin. It's green life gain Splinter Twin to some extent. Like, is that not worth worrying about? Like, are just the assumption that we're going to find the Yav Maya at some point and, like,
also
don't worry about it?
Also, the fog is sneaky. Fruition is sorcery speed. You can't be sneaky with it. You just have to
get it. I guess that is true.
If you have no Yav Maya and you have, let's say you're playing Richard Mana Base, you have three forests. You know, there's another green player. They have five, one mana gain eight. You know, it's not horrendous.
Not good,
you know what I mean? But like, it's not like the end of the world. But you can also just be a green believer and play like 10 forests, which I would highly recommend you not do. And fruition is one mana gain 10 based on yourself as well. It's not.
And
like,
I guess it counts dual lands.
Oh my
as well.
God.
Yeah. People play breeding pools. People play, you know, stuff like that, right?
This card is sorcery.
It is sorcery.
Oh no, Krim, we've lost you.
Wow.
Morgan just pointed it out that that's a sorcery. I just assumed this was instant. I didn't even
bother
to read it.
Broken at instant.
Oh,
I,
I will bump it up.
Terrible. Hold on. What?
It is sorcery.
I'll say up here at B. I would sometimes play it.
I'll bump it up slightly.
I need to come out of retirement. It's like I need to fruition you guys to death until
we believe. That's what
I fog you guys until everyone is a fog believer. We're gonna take it to the next step. We're gonna fruition. We'll just go double fruition every game. I'll cheat. I'll put two fruitions in my deck.
I have a short list of cards that for when I'm on Commander Clash, I'm like, all right, if I'm playing this color, I'm going to try this card because I don't know how I feel about this card. I'm just going to jam this in every green deck and see how it does.
And see what happens. Well,
worst case is it sucks.
I mean, I will say, I'll bump it up to C purely out of respect for Richard. And because of he did really convince the whole world, or at least all of us, that Fogs are good in Commander. And he was right about that. So I think it's probably at least good in Richard decks. So I will give it that, even though I am still not convinced. But maybe he'll come back on some Commander Clash episodes.
I just want to say, this is why it's better than Fog, right? A lot of people, you're taking advantage of the rules of Commander. They will knock you low to 5 life and then leave you alone because you're on death's door. Right? And they will leave you alone and focus attention elsewhere. You just build resources and then kazam, I'm back to 40 and you left me alone the whole game and I'm back. Right? Like it plays so well into that you guys need to play it, right? Like people do not finish off the dead player. You just sit there and be like, right?
But Richard, what if Phil's at the table and he just randomly pings a Screaming Nemesis just to troll you?
Okay, well, I mean, yeah. Screaming Nemesis. What's that enchantment you always play, Krim? Like the one mana one that
Sulfuric Vortex?
Are counters to the life gain and fog meta. Once we have shown our true power, the counters will have to come out, and then you gotta move on.
But these are cards that are already there to counter existing and popular things. So,
fruition exists.
I have done my job.
I'm not trying to counter fruition. I'm countering life gain.
Anyway, I think we just put it in the C tier, maybe.
At least above Haunt of Hightower?
We'll put it right above Haunt of Hightower.
It
beats True Conviction in Haunt of Hightower.
What? No.
Anyway, everyone, that is our life gain tier list. Hopefully you enjoyed this conversation. Let us know what you think about these life gain spells. Do you play fruition? Is it worth it? Are any of these spells even actually life gain? Are they finishers? Let us know what you think in the comments. And we'll be back next week to talk some more Commander. So until then, everyone, have an amazing week. And this is a Crew signing out.